Is the Ohio River the one at Cuyahoga Valley that was like...
No, the one that lit on fire?
Yeah.
That's the Cuyahoga River.
Oh, is it? It's not the Ohio River. Okay, yes. I was like, ooh, I don't know how much you'd want to be canoeing in there. This is the Exploring the National Parks podcast with Dirt in My Shoes. My name is Ash, and I'm a former park ranger and the founder of Dirt in My Shoes. I think that the parks are best seen from the trail, and I'm here to make national park trip planning easy.
And I'm John. I carry the kids on the trails, I tell stories, and notice all the things that Ash doesn't care about much, like birds.
Join us as we show you around America's spectacular national parks.
We're sharing our favorite places, fun facts, adventures, and misadventures.
And we'll even throw in a little trip planning.
Let's start exploring.
So I got this email this morning that made me pretty grumpy. So we have been planning to do this episode today for a while.
Right.
And we want to talk about the next national park contenders, right? The ones that people are saying that may become national parks next. Right. I don't know. Who knows when?
Right. So, it's kind of an exciting conversation sometimes. You have to, like, you think, which monuments are up and coming? Or which ones have the most visitation sometimes and things like that?
Right. So we have been wanting to do this episode, but I'm like, okay. We got to wait until there's like a break in Congress where they're not actually going to pass anything. We got to make sure, you know, so that it doesn't. How sad would that be if we talk about all these national park contenders and then they pass a new national park before we have time to even release the episode?
Right.
So I get this email this morning. I open up my inbox and here is the headline. Amache National Historic Site formally established as America's newest national park. And I was like, no, that's not even one that people were thinking would become one. Like, that's not on my list.
Right.
And so I'm looking at this Amache National Historic Site, and they have a picture of it. And, like, it looks super cool. I love historic sites. They're awesome. So this is the newest, quote, national park, which I will talk about in a minute as well.
Right.
I've got to rant a little bit here. But basically, this National Historic Site, it's in Colorado, and it shows it's like a Japanese internment camp.
Right.
And so really cool stuff to celebrate. Well, not celebrate. That's not the right word.
Right.
But to like to save this spot so that people can go and visit and learn about what happened here.
Exactly. Right? It's the perfect place to preserve so that people can learn from it.
But because it's an internment camp, like most of it is just buildings.
Right.
And so going back to that headline in my email, I was like, America's newest national park. No. People, we've got to stop making national parks out of man-made structures.
Right.
In general. I don't have a problem with like Mesa Verde or anything like that, but I do have a problem with Gateway Arch. That should not be a national park. It should be a memorial or a historic site or something along that line.
Right.
So anyway, so I get this email and I'm reading through it and I'm like, wait, because a lot of times they'll take historic sites or monuments or memorials or anything like that and upgrade them into an actual national park.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, well, this is a historic site and it says now it's the newest national park. But nowhere could I see where it was called a national park officially. Like it's not an official one of the 63, right? So it all just gets really confusing. And this is my problem. Oh, well, let me go back. It's not a national park.
Right.
Okay. What they did is President Biden, like a couple years ago, signed into making this a historic site.
Mm-hmm.
But then they had to actually work with the town and the area to actually get the land they needed to have a historic site here.
Right.
So they had to acquire this land and they had to set it up. And so this email today is saying, yay, we did it. Like it's an official national historic site.
Woohoo!
But it's not a national park. It's not. So when you go to the national, I don't know if this bugs anyone else, but when you go to the national park site or like if you're searching for like national parks in California, mm-hmm. for example, a lot of the times you'll see like this list of here are the 48 best national parks in California. And I'm like, no.
Yes.
There
this
are.
This is and I agree with Ash completely on this. I am like, it is one of my biggest bugaboos, I think. It's just like, no. That is not.
There might be 48 national park sites, like right. run by the National Park Service. So that can be trails, recreation areas, monuments, memorials, historic sites. All of that falls under little N national little P park sites, right?
Right.
But there's only 9 national parks that are national parks.
Right.
So it just gets so confusing. And I hate it when people do this, like especially on Google, for like getting people to click over to their site and be like, these are the top 40 national parks in California ranked. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, there are 9 official national parks. You're confusing people.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Anyway, this email was super confusing. It's not a national park, capital N, capital P. It's a national park site. It's been established as a historic site, which is super cool. And I want to go visit. I think yeah. it looks really neat. And I would love to take our kids there and have them learn about what happened during World War II with the Japanese Americans. Like, I think that's super important.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not a capital N, capital P national park. So right. there's my rant.
Right. Well, I also think that these distinctions matter.
Well, they do.
Because there's national monuments, and a lot of the national monuments are set up the Antiquities Act to protect and preserve certain aspects and certain things. And then you have national historic sites that are there to memorialize or to teach us about certain points in time and certain things that happened in history. And then you have the national parks, which are there for preservation, conservation, and recreation.
The process is slightly different. I mean, it's pretty hard to become a national park. You've got to get both sides of Congress. You got to get it all.
Right.
They all have to say yes. So it is a little bit harder to become a national park as well. So anyway, I was just like, phew, breathe a sigh of relief. Today's list of what might actually become the next national park is still intact.
Yes.
We are not out of date yet. As of today, we wanted to talk about some of the contenders for what will be America's national park number 64.
Right.
And this is a request episode from Quinn. So shout out to Quinn. Thank you for all of the great ideas. We've gotten a lot of requests.
Yeah, which
for
is
podcast
really fun.
Episodes. Yeah. So we love that. But just for point of reference, the last national park was New River Gorge, and that was December 27th, 2020.
Right.
So it's been 3 years, basically,
mm-hmm.
3.5 years since we've gotten a new national park. So I'm really excited to talk through this list. For the record, I've only been to 2 of these places mm-hmm. that are on the list. I think you've only been to 1.
Yeah, I don't think I've been to that many of them.
Yeah, so we got to learn some new things, and we just wanted to talk today about some of these cool places that you may or may not have heard of either that are in the running according to the general consensus. Basically, what I'm seeing is there's like 7 main contenders that people have been lobbying for trying to become a national park.
Right.
So let's start with 1. Let's jump up to Maine. And
I love Maine. It deserves another national park.
You know what? This is one I would love to go to.
Yeah.
Too. Like, I think this one has the quintessential, like, this is Maine vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So we are talking about Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument.
Oh, that sounds awesome. So, just the name. It just makes me feel like, oh.
Woods and Waters. It's kind of a mouthful.
It is a little bit.
I had a hard time saying that, but Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. This is in northern Maine,
mm-hmm.
and the National Monument was established in 2016, so it's not that old.
Which would be kind of a Cinderella story in a lot of ways if this thing, being relatively new in the first place, jumped to the front of the line and became a national park.
Yeah. So if you've heard of Mount Katahdin, which is Maine's highest peak, actually,
mm-hmm.
which is cool in and of itself. But the main thing about Mount Katahdin that if you're a hiker, you might recognize is this is the end of the Appalachian Trail.
Right.
So it's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
People hike for 6 months to make their pilgrimage up to the top of Mount Katahdin.
Right.
So I think that's super cool. I have always wanted to go there.
It almost just deserves it based on that alone.
Yeah.
In my mind.
I agree. I think this one is cool. But the other thing about it that's really cool is like it has ponds and streams, dense forests. It has a ton of wildlife. This is where you're going to find the moose in Maine that you don't find in Acadia. That's,
I was going to make a joke. This is a national park in Maine that I could buy a t-shirt with a moose on
exactly.
it. Because I did not see a moose in Acadia, therefore I cannot buy a t-shirt with a moose on it.
I know. Well, because there's not really moose in Acadia. How right. disappointed were we?
We were so sad.
So
everything has moose on it. And we're just like, I only saw seagulls.
Well, there's a ton of moose in Maine, but just not in Acadia. But they're all at Mount Katahdin.
Right.
So there you go. We just need to balance it out so that there's actually moose in a Maine national park.
Yes.
I feel like that's really important to me.
Moose and an epic hiking trail.
Yeah. So I'm all on board for this one. The main things that people like to do, like we said, there's a lot of hiking, not just the Appalachian Trail, but that's really the main one. There's the Katahdin Loop Road that you can drive just to soak in all the views, lots of viewpoints and trailheads and things like that. We mentioned the wildlife. Canoeing or kayaking the Penobscot River is really popular up here. Fishing, a lot of river and stream type recreation.
I think that would be a really cool thing to be able to do in that specific national park. I bet you the fishing would just rock everybody's world.
Yeah. Yeah. So I am so on board with this one. I would love to see this become a national park.
Do you think you'd be able to see the Northern Lights from here? Is it far enough north?
Yeah, I bet you could see them. I think probably the bigger issue would be getting clear enough skies.
Yeah,
during the winter.
Because it's as far north, if not more, than like Voyagers. And we've seen that there's Northern Lights there.
If it's Northern Maine, you're like way up into Canada if you went parallel to where you are in Maine. So yeah, I'm sure you can see them if the sky is clear. And it gets really cold in Maine, so.
Yeah, that'd be so cool.
By
the way, my boys and I recently started ice fishing as well. And so I bet you could ice fish up here.
I mean, Maine is heaven for outdoorsy people.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to do up in there. So, so much. So anyway, I'm all on board with that one. I really like that option. And I think that it would be really exciting to see that as a national park.
Right. Do you think they'd stick with the name? Or do you think they'd shorten it down? Like, that's why they changed it to Zion from the name that it was before. That would be interesting.
That is kind of a mouthful.
More easy to say.
But I really like the romanticism of Katahdin Woods and Waters. Sounds pretty good.
The next one, which takes us actually way far south. I don't even know how to pronounce this properly.
Okmulgee?
Okmulgee Mounds National Historic Park in Georgia is another one that's on the short list here for becoming a national park.
I have always wanted to go here.
Yes.
Let the record show that even a lot of people still don't know about this place, but I am a sucker for like Native American history and stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's one here in Georgia, the Okmulgee Mounds. There's another one, I think it's Ohio.
Yep, Ohio has some mound builders.
Right, that has some mounds. But I have always wanted to see these in person. And so the fact that like these are a contender, this Okmulgee Mounds in Georgia is a contender, just really makes me excited.
Yeah, I actually saw there's a documentary on Netflix. And I don't remember the exact name of it, but it was like Lost Civilizations. And it's basically this guy that goes through a lot of these ancient civilizations all around the world. And he points out that a lot of these ancient peoples, they built pyramids. They also had a lot of similar like creation or like ancient flood myths and things like that. Mm-hmm. But what was super neat that was, at least here in North America, stories that he kind of followed and he exhibited in this documentary was the mound builders used the stars in so many cool ways. And so you'll be able to track lots of really interesting things like the summer solstice, the winter solstice, and you have all of these different mounds built in conjunction with these amazing things that happen in the sky. And so as you visit this place specifically, but also the one that we mentioned about in Ohio, it's like, oh my gosh, these people knew the galaxy, man. Mm-hmm. They knew the cosmos so much better than we do now. And they actually built an entire landscape that helps to track a lot of the cosmological things that you can find when you pay attention to what's happening in the sky.
Oh, it's so cool. So Akmulgi says that this park has artifacts, mounds, ceremonial sites that span 17,000 years of human habitation.
That's nuts.
So it's archaeologically and historically is just like incredible.
Yeah.
In addition to that, so one of the main, like the main part of the park, you want to go see the Great Temple Mound, which is a structure. It's a big mound, mm-hmm. basically. I mean, so they used it, they said they used it for ceremonial and burial grounds, like right. these different mounds. But this one, the Great Temple, is 56 feet above the floodplain of the river. So oh. it's tall, like, I don't know, bodies in there? I don't know. What's in there? I've never been there. I want to learn more. But yeah, so they just said archaeologically, it's just so cool.
Yeah.
But a huge span of human habitation, which is crazy because like Mesa Verde, for example, mm-hmm. so the Pueblo houses, like structures that right. are under the canyon, not on top. There's the stuff on top goes back a little further, but the stuff like under the canyon is a very small blip in time, like right. hundreds of years. We're not even in the thousands at all.
No.
And so I think it's like 600 years, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
Right? To like, and I love Mesa Verde. It's so cool. But to think that we could protect an area as a national park that has 17,000 years of archaeology and history and human habitation is just so cool to me.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, this should be, I just want it all to be national parks.
I know. This list is really cool.
That's so neat. And what an awesome way to celebrate the ancient history of North American cultures.
I mean, that is our history of people
right.
in North America, right? It's yeah. all the Native Americans.
Yes.
So when you go to Europe and you're like, oh, we don't have very much history. We have a ton of history. We have a ton of history here.
Exactly.
It's just they built mounds instead of cathedrals.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
They were figuring out the stars, man. And that's, it was their history. It's so cool.
So a few things that people like to do here. I mentioned the Great Temple Mound, which is the largest and most prominent one. You can hike to the top of it. So that's really cool. The Earth Lodge, which is reconstructed to show you kind of how they lived, what types of ceremonies they did, stuff like that. There's some hiking, not much, but some bird watching is really popular here. Ranger-led programs are a big deal. Places like this where the rangers are interpreting the history and mm-hmm. the way of life, just like you have to jump in on one of these. It's not the same you don't jump in on a ranger-led tour somewhere where it's talking about human history.
Right. Exactly. I feel like you would miss so much. You wouldn't even know what you were looking at.
Yeah.
It would probably be on our very short list of our favorite national park ranger programs.
Yeah.
Because it's just like when you go to Chaco Canyon or when you go to Mesa Verde, these people have such a depth of knowledge about what you're seeing, because honestly all you would be seeing is what would look like a grassy knoll.
Yeah I mean, that's what the pictures look like. I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting.
Exactly. But a lot of these mounds are built, it's a different kind of soil so that it can stand so differently than everything around it.
And how is it still standing?
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. So with the Great Temple Mound, it was talking about how it's right 56 feet above the floodplain of the river.
Mm-hmm.
And so just the fact that it's still there when it's like that close to a river or in a floodplain or...
Oh, yeah.
That would erode so fast if you didn't build it right. So I love
exactly.
that. The other cool thing about Akmulgi Mounds is that they do special events and festivals throughout the year
uh-huh.
to celebrate the archaeology, to celebrate the culture, stuff like that. And so if you can plan a trip during one of those, even better.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Those are people's favorite things to do at Akmulgi Mounds national historic site.
Right.
And I am here for it.
Yes.
I'm here for it.
And just so in case anybody wants to watch that Netflix series, the episode that I was talking about, the show is Ancient Apocalypse by Graham Hancock.
I feel like if you have any conspiracy theories, like, just share them with John. He'll be with you on that.
Oh,
my
gosh.
He likes a lot of stuff like that.
I really enjoy a good conspiracy theory. It's so much fun. Yes. This is one that's true, guys.
Yeah, this is not a conspiracy theory. It's alive over here in Georgia. You can actually go see it. So cool. Okay, the third place that is on the contenders list for being a new national park is the Tongass National Forest in Alaska.
Anything in Alaska should be a national park.
I know. Alaska has so much acreage that is already set aside.
I know, it's true.
It's like,
it's almost unfair.
Although Alaska is huge, so
right.
It's fine. I'm fine with this. So Tongass National Forest is 17 million acres.
Oh my gosh.
It's the largest national forest in the country.
Right.
And it's in Southeast Alaska. So this is one that I have been to. And I don't know if you've been there because
nope.
I did not go with you. This is when I was working in Glacier Bay. I spent a lot of time in Southeast Alaska. And so this national forest is down by Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
It includes probably like something that you would recognize whether you've been there or not is the Mendenhall Glacier that's right outside of Juneau.
Right.
Super close to Juneau.
Right.
So Tongass National Forest includes this Mendenhall Glacier area plus 17 million more acres. So
just added a couple of zeros on. And then you're talking,
you know,
real size.
If they protected this whole national forest, which honestly, I doubt they would. But if they did, it would make it the largest national park in the country.
Really?
Yeah. You've got Wrangell St. Elias in Alaska, which right now is the largest national park in the country. And that one's around 13 million.
Jeez, so this is significantly larger.
It is. But here's the thing. So I do not have a problem with this becoming a national park. Like, I am all for it. I think it'd be amazing. But this is a national forest. So it's not actually within the national park system at all right now. You can use the land in a national forest very differently than you can use it in a national park, which is why I think it would be kind of a stretch to change this national forest into a national park.
Yeah.
Straight across. They wouldn't do it straight across.
There's so many industries that are embedded in national forests.
Well, because you can still log and hunt and mine, stuff like that in national forests.
Right.
And so I do think there would be like massive uproar from people if you tried to make the whole thing a national park, but they could take a chunk of it.
Yeah.
And say, you know what? In this section right here, we're not going to do any of those things.
Yeah. Just find like the, I actually think a couple of years ago, it's ringing some bells as we're talking about this. I get a lot of emails from a lot of conservation nonprofits and things like that, who keep, you know, telling people donate for this or donate for that, sign this petition and things like that. Well, I think I got one for Tongass National Forest because they were trying to protect a certain part of it, because I think it has some areas that have some really ancient groves, like some really old growth forest sections. And I think that in my mind is like, yeah, let's protect that. All these other industries that we talk about, they've had access to so many other places, but let's protect the old growth sections.
I'm just looking at the website. It says that the heart of Tongass is adorned with ancient Sitka spruce.
Nice.
And western red cedar trees, some of which have stood for centuries.
Yeah.
Then it also, like, it protects a lot of species like bears, eagles, salmon, the Sitka black-tailed deer, which I don't think I've ever seen. There's a coastal rainforest ecosystem. There's fjords. There's,
nice,
old growth temperate rainforest, huge mountains, all of the above.
That's so cool.
But in addition to that, too, this area, a lot of areas, honestly, in Alaska are very sacred to Native peoples. And so protecting some of Tongass National Forest would also protect a way of life that people have had in this area for a long time. It would help us learn more about the cultural aspects of the Southeast Alaska area, which is really cool. Because I, like I said, I lived in this area. I worked in this area. Like the traditional Tlingit Native American ways and stuff just play a huge part in Glacier Bay specifically. But there's also a few other indigenous tribes that use this area, have inhabited this area for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the Tlingit, I don't know how to say these, but like the Haida and the Tsimshian peoples. Anyway, my pronunciation, but it's just cool. There's a lot of different tribes in this area that have used the land forever.
The Native American cultures here are probably a lot of the ones that you kind of envision when you're thinking of Alaska. A lot of the totem poles and a lot of the really beautiful carvings and the really amazing wood canoes carved out of these giant trees.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a really cool culture that you can share with people by making this a national park, because people will come and people will learn.
Yeah.
But also the natural resources that you could possibly protect by finding a core area of this. I mean, you can not only protect old growth forests, but that also protects a lot of the animals that live there, like the specific owls or birds that need old growth forest trees to nest in. But also you'll protect the water resources. And so you'll have all these river systems that cut through the national park. And a lot of those are perfect salmon fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll have amazing fish aquatic resources as well. Not all, but also all the bears and these other huge, these mammal predators that have a large area of land that is their range that they wander across as they hunt and things like that. And so there's a lot of great reasons to protect this place. It's the most amazing landscape. If you just think of ocean leading up into these amazing evergreen forests, sometimes cross-cut by glaciers and things like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. So I mentioned Mendenhall Glacier, which is a really popular one to go see from Juneau. So there's a lot of hiking here, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And the cool thing about hiking in Alaska is like you literally never know what you're going to see, like wildlife-wise.
Yeah.
But there's some trails that will take you through areas of the forest, but there's also some that will take you to glaciers. There's some that will take you to some good wildlife viewing spots. So that's a big deal in this park too, wildlife viewing. Fishing is huge, as we mentioned. There's a lot of water with salmon and other species. Something I've never done here, what I love to do is a boat tour, because there are big fjords and inlets. You can see glaciers from a boat.
Right.
So that's really cool. Canoeing, kayaking, anything like that. Just again, because there's so much water. The Tongass Highway is a really cool scenic drive that you can do. You can do flight seeing tours, which holy smokes.
Right.
You can see so many cool things from a flight seeing tour. So just lots, like no matter how you like to recreate, you can find that here. And I think that's mostly true of anywhere in Alaska, mm-hmm. but it would be cool to take a little section of this and pull it into the national park system, I think.
I love it. And I think a lot of people, especially on the preservation side of like the debate, are thinking, just leave it as it is. If nobody knows about it, it'll be just fine. But at the same time, it's like, but if we don't protect it, then some of these industries might get into some of these old growth forest areas, or they might disrupt some things eventually. And so if we can start the preservation or conservation of it now, then we can just make sure we lock down some sections.
I mean, and I will say that John and I lean towards preservation
mm-hmm.
over all things. we're not huge, like we don't hunt. We don't do a lot of the other things that people like to do in some natural areas. And we are national park people.
Right.
And so we would love to see more areas protected from other things that maybe aren't our favorite things to do. So understanding, having it be a national forest, it's not that it's not protected. It is.
Right.
It's protected. It's just loose.
Yeah.
It's looser than it would be if it's a national park. So either way, it's not like we're destroying this land because it's not a national park.
We're just a big fan of boundaries.
There's just a really cool, there's some really cool parts of it that probably we should put some boundaries around mm-hmm. and say, hey, don't touch these.
Right. And so, for the rest of the national forest, just we won't be up in arms about stuff that you do in those, but put up some boundaries around the really cool, really important sections.
Like the trees. We're suckers for trees. Old growth forest trees. It's like, please don't cut those down. Please don't. We can't get those back. They've been there for so long.
I know. It's so, true.
Anyway, that's a big deal to us.
Plus, when you put that national park designation on something, then you just add some resources that make the place more accessible while still protecting it too. And so you allow people to visit this place and see some amazing things that they otherwise would never have a chance to see.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's such a neat opportunity to share this place with the world.
I'm here for it. I will never say no to more land in Alaska being protected. So
this next one is fun because it's really close to home for us.
Yeah, this is number four. And this is the other one that I've been to.
Craters of the Moon National Monument, Idaho.
Yeah, I thought this was funny. On the National Park Service website, it says that Idaho already has a national park.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guess which one?
Because Yellowstone.
Yeah, there's like, I don't know, 10 feet of land of Yellowstone in Idaho. So they count it. So what I think would be cool about this on Craters of the Moon is it would, in my mind, be Idaho's first national park.
Right. I
Yellowstone
agree with that.
Doesn't count. So it would be Idaho's first national park, which in a state that is so beautiful mm-hmm. and has so many cool things to do, the fact that it doesn't have its own national park is kind of crazy.
It really is. But also what would be so funny about it, too, is that this would be a national park in Idaho with one of the most beautiful places with the most alien landscape
in
being
like
protected.
One of the most barren and dry parts of Idaho.
Oh my gosh. So different from like what you're imagining.
Listen,
Fish Lake, Idaho from the yes. Goofy movie. You know, we're going to Lake Destiny, Idaho.
It's Redfish Lake in the Sawtooths.
Yes.
Yeah. But I love that movie so much. Lake Destiny, Idaho.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun, dun. That's so good.
I know. It is so good. Yeah. Maybe people didn't know that Lake Destiny in Goofy movie is based off of Redfish Lake in Idaho.
Ooh, that's a deep cut.
It is. Look it up. Redfish Lake. We've been there. We love this area. It's so pretty. This is not the area of Idaho we're talking about for Craters of the Moon. There's a lot of ugly parts of Idaho, too.
Yes.
We live really close to Idaho. We spend a lot of time in Idaho, mm-hmm. but Craters of the Moon is in the less pretty part of Idaho, but it's a volcanic park. And so you expect it to be a little bit more barren and dry and just with all that molten rock everywhere stuff. So
that is why this place is so cool, because it's this incredible lowland desert among all of these amazing, beautiful mountains in different sections. But it's really cool. But you just drive through this part of Idaho. And that's what it is for a lot of people, is just a drive through place. You drive past this on your way to Sun Valley, which is a beautiful ski resort area, the Sawtooths, or you drive through it on the way to Yellowstone if you're going the other direction. But what you don't notice, because it's not a national park yet, a lot of people are like, Craters of the Moon National Monument. I'm going to a national park, so I'm not going to stop
that. Which we've been guilty of before.
Right.
And also, okay, I have driven through Idaho so many times, like growing up and heading to Yellowstone, stuff like that. And off of I-15, you'll see a sign for Craters of the Moon mm-hmm. where you turn off and you're not anywhere close to Craters of the Moon. You still got to drive for a while after you turn off. But there's also a rest area near that sign.
This is the funniest
and
thing.
It's a really cool rest area. It's my favorite rest area in the whole world because it's like a mound with grass on it. When you go into the rest area, you're like going, it feels like you're going underground, like right. a little hobbit hole. So I love that rest area, but I always, and it's kind of volcanic around it. Like there is volcanic rock around it and
right.
stuff. And I, for 25 years, thought, that was Craters of the Moon.
This funny little rest area that has a sign directing you to Craters of the Moon.
I thought that just, was actually Craters of the Moon. We went for the first time a couple years ago and I was like, oh, Craters of the Moon. Yes, it's not just a rest area.
Oh my gosh. This parking lot. Anyway, it was just so funny.
It's just right off I-15. Like it's literally, you just like pop on and off I-15, where versus going to actual Craters of the Moon, you've got to drive for like an hour through nothing. So I learned my lesson.
Yes.
But I'm on board for this, and I like this one because, well, I mean, not only is it really cool, but this national monument was established in 1924.
So it's really old.
It's really old. 100 years old. You know what? They should make it a national park this year. It's 100th anniversary.
Yes.
They should do that. But yes, that's a pretty old national monument.
Whether you're on the Republican or on the Democrat side, that should be your campaign slogan. 100 years, craters of the moon.
Yeah. So I really like this place. There's lava tubes. You can see a bunch of cinder cones. It's volcanic. You're looking at volcanoes.
That's one of my favorite things about this is you literally are driving across an ancient, destroyed landscape because of giant volcanic activity, and you get to explore the remnants of all of these volcanoes. You can hike onto cinder cones and see where the lava spewed out of, and you can look down into it, and you can see different kinds of volcanoes. Not all volcanoes are created equal, and they're not all the same because different lava has different consistencies, different properties, and so that affects the way that the volcano forms. There's just so much to learn about the way the world works from the inside out, mm-hmm. and it's so cool.
I remember what I thought was really cool is from the visitor center parking lot, you look across and it's just volcano, volcano, volcano.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're cinder cones, but like,
right,
it counts. You can see a whole bunch all in a row. It's like its own mountain range, small mountain range of cinder cones.
Yeah.
Which I just think is really cool. Yeah. And geology wise, it's a huge deal.
Yeah. It's really neat. You learn so much from all the different placards and things, and you can stop in the visitor center and they can teach you some awesome stuff. But what blew me away as we're driving through this desolate landscape, I was blown away by the trees. Like, mm-hmm. I could not believe that there was a limber pine forest literally popping up out of lava. I mean, they're nothing compared to like redwood trees.
An actual forest of trees.
Right, exactly. They're pretty far apart. They're way bigger than you would expect, mm-hmm. and way more of them than you would expect. And it just blows my mind. These big pine trees literally coming out of lava. So cool.
Yeah. And when we were there, there were also a whole bunch of white flowers popping out of the lava.
Like, right. There's buckwheat. Those were buckwheat plants.
There's lava fields everywhere. And I made John stop driving. I turned into one of those annoying people that just like,
put your flashers on. Yes.
I got to look at this better. And there was nowhere to pull off, but nobody was in the park. So it was fine. But yeah, I was just like, my mind was really confused because there's all these beautiful flowers
mm-hmm.
popping out of the really black lava field.
Yeah.
And I was just like, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? This is crazy.
It was super cool. And you've got this super harsh landscape, and then you have all of these awesome, cool plants that are just like, hold my beer. They can handle the heat. They can handle the lack of water, this desert heat, and then the cold that comes in the winter. It's just, these are the toughest plants in the world.
Yeah. So some of the things that you'll want to do at Craters of the Moon, there's a 7-mile loop road that you can drive that takes you to a bunch of stuff. That's where I made John stop driving so I could look at the flowers. There are some really cool hiking trails. John said you can hike to the top of some of these. You mm-hmm. can look down into the craters. on some of these, which is really cool. Going into the lava tubes is a huge thing. You've got the Indian Tunnel, the Boy Scout Cave. You've got different things you can do there.
Right.
Stargazing, because you really are in the middle of nowhere, and Idaho has pretty good clear skies.
Right.
And there's a campground there, so you can stay
right
at the campground and go stargazing at night. And then the visitor center is really fun, just so you know what you're looking at when mm-hmm. you're there.
The Junior Ranger program here specifically was really valuable for us and our kids because it forced us to actually learn about what we're seeing so that we could actually appreciate it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we would have just been like, oh, look at the black ground as we drive around and see a few mounds here and there, and that would have been it.
So, all in favor of Idaho's first national park? I think that Idaho should have one. So I'm all for Craters of the Moon becoming a national park.
Yes.
Number five.
Mm-hmm.
Number five contender for a new national park. The Shawnee National Forest in Illinois.
This one sounds awesome.
This one would be the first national park in Illinois.
I'm all for firsts.
I really think so, too. I think every state should have one national park at least.
I think that's a great idea.
Right? We have like 20 states that don't have them.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with the states that don't have them. Start adding a national park to every state so everybody can see one within a few hours.
Yeah. But I think that there's a problem with that.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah. I do have a problem with that.
Why?
Because I think that the ones we have now are just so cool. And
you don't want any more?
No, I do. I'm all for every state can have their national parks, but we need to have an OG status for the original.
Yes, let's make it even more confusing for people. Well, there's over 420 national parks, but they're not all really national parks. And then there's 64 real national parks, but they're not all OG national parks. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I get what you're saying, though.
I didn't say there weren't holes in my logic. It was just a proposal.
Maybe there's holes in my logic, too. But I do think it would be cool for Shawnee National Forest to become a national park so that Illinois can also have a national park.
Yeah.
I think that's a big deal.
That's a big deal. And I love Eastern forests are so pretty. Like, this would probably be another one of those Eastern forests that you're like, I have to go here in the autumn just so that I can get all the amazing colors.
Yeah. You know what I want to see? I want to see Garden of the Gods, which there is a Garden of the Gods in Colorado, so that's a little confusing too. But Garden of the Gods in Shawnee National Forest, this is a wilderness area. It says there are colossal sandstone formations.
Ooh.
And it looks, it's really cool. If you look at pictures, it's like all these just rocks coming out. And I love rocks coming out when you don't expect it. There's natural arches, which I think really sounds cool. There's a balanced rock, which sounds cool. So I'm all for, I mean, we're from Utah. We're used to weird rock formations and stuff like that. And this sounds like along that same vein, just with more greenery and not in the West, which would be kind of cool.
That sounds really cool. That sounds super fun. And this place isn't small either. I mean, it's 280,000 acres.
That's bigger than a lot of national parks.
Yeah.
So I'm all for that. I think Zion's around like 150. So.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's because a lot of Eastern national parks have a whole lot of private land like dotting within them.
Uh-huh.
I wonder how much of this, like how many of those inholdings there are.
Yeah. Kind of like Cuyahoga.
Yeah.
How interesting that one is where it's like there's a little town in the middle of the national. Canada does their national parks that way.
Right.
I'm not sure how I feel about that, but
It
would be cool to have more protected land in the East.
Well, this could be really cool. Like if there are a lot of farmlands and homesteads inside of it, it could be kind of like Cades Cove in Great Smoky Mountains,
yeah.
Where you have some really beautiful farmland valleys.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
So this says that Shawnee National Forest was established in 1939. It has lush woodlands, rugged bluffs, rolling hills, picturesque lakes. Like I said, it has the Garden of the Gods wilderness area with the sandstone formations. It includes the Illinois Ozarks. So that's cool. There's a river-to-river trail that goes through the forest from the Ohio River to the Mississippi River.
Ooh, that's cool.
So that's pretty cool. Again, similar to Tongass, this one is a national forest, so it's not protected under the National Park Service right now, Which I think would make it harder to get its national park designation.
Right.
Again, because just the land uses are very different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'd be pretty cool if they could pull it off.
That'd be so cool. That would be a lot of fun.
The other thing that I was looking at, I was thinking, well, Indiana Dunes is pretty close too.
Right.
Just right across the border or whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
But there's none in Illinois, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah.
So some of the things that people like to do at Shawnee National Forest is, like I mentioned, the river to river trail is a big deal. You can drive the Shawnee Hills Scenic Byway or the Ohio River Scenic Byway if you want a really nice scenic drive. You've got the Garden of the Gods. Rock climbing is really big here.
Interesting.
Because of the sandstone cliffs.
That's so cool.
Which is really interesting. Sandstone isn't the best for rock climbing usually, but Moab is full of
a lot of bouldering sandstone opportunities that, for some of the smaller
bouldering
ones.
Is a big one. Yeah. So I think that's really cool. I would love to go check that out. Fishing, because you've got all those big rivers in this area. So fishing, boating, canoeing on the Ohio River, like that's a big deal. Question.
Huh?
Is the Ohio River the one at Cuyahoga Valley that was like...
No, the one that lit on fire?
Yeah.
That's the Cuyahoga River.
Oh, is it? It's not the Ohio River. Okay, yes. I was like, I don't know how much you'd want to be canoeing in there.
Or eating the fish that come out of it.
Yeah, okay, wrong river. So that's good.
Right.
Horseback riding. People love to go horseback riding. I mentioned before, because this is a national forest, people like to go hunting here, which they would not be able to do in the national park. That would probably be a big uproar if they did take it and turn it into a national park. But lots of really cool things to do. I would love to check this out. I am really curious about the rock climbing.
Yeah.
I want to see what it's like. So
we have to get our gear out. And
I just think it'd be really cool to see those sandstone cliffs. So anyway, that's Shawnee National Forest, contender number 5.
Number 6. We've driven past a bunch of times.
I know. And I'm like really sad we've never stopped, but we're always like en route to somewhere else and don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's always on the way to White Sands.
So number 6 is Chiricahua National Monument in Arizona.
Right.
This is located, so if you're driving from like Saguaro to White Sands, you're driving along the highway or the freeway there, you'll see the turnoff to Chiricahua. And we've seen it so many times. And we've never turned off. It's kind of close to Tombstone, actually.
Right. That'd be a cool thing to combine together.
It'd be amazing. I don't know why we haven't done it, but now we're going to do it. The next time I'm down there, in fact, we're going to Phoenix here pretty soon. And I was like, how far is it to Chiricahua from Phoenix? It's like 3 hours. It's not very close. Next time we're in Tucson.
Yes.
Yeah, Chiricahua, I think really, from what I can see, this one is kind of the front runner for a new national park. People really want this to be a national park.
Right.
And it's already a national monument, which I think when they're already a national monument, the jump to national park is like nothing.
You just got to change the sign almost.
Yeah.
It's already part of the park service. It's already got incredible protection.
Listen, this one is established in 1924, same as Craters of the Moon. 100th year anniversary. Let's do it, Congress.
Give us one of these.
Yeah.
Just one.
Yeah. So this one the monument is 11,000 acres. It has rock pinnacles. So it's a lot like reminiscent kind of Bryce Canyon.
Well, some where you're hoodoos.
Hiking. Yeah. You're hiking through these rock pinnacles, stuff like that. It's not a very big area. Another thing that I know about it that I've never stopped again, I haven't looked into this very much, but I know that for the Native Americans and stuff, it's very culturally significant in that area as well. So pretty cool.
One thing for me that I think is super spectacular, and I love this about Big Bend. I love it with all desert national parks. I love desert national parks that have black bears. I just think that's so cool.
I know.
It seems so out of place. And this place has black bears, and it just makes me happy.
Which is very surprising, I feel like. You know what else it has? That I've literally never heard about.
What?
Cody Mundy's.
Sounds Cody like Mundy's. Some guy's name. Cody Mundy's. Present.
Some people just call them Cody's. So they live in the trees. They're mostly in South and Central America, but they can be found in Arizona and New Mexico.
Okay.
And they're related to the raccoon.
Oh, are they like ringtail things?
They're ringtailed. It says they're the size of a large house cat.
Ooh.
And they hang out in the trees. They look pretty freaky, honestly. So anyway, those are at Chiricahua as well, which is just all better reason to go see something weird. But yeah, so this one I think it looks really cool. It's one of those places I wish that we have stopped at before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's volcanic too, which is, I think, really interesting. It says there were massive volcanic eruptions 27 million years ago that led to the creation of those hoodoos.
Nice.
So it's different than Bryce Canyon.
Yeah,
Bryce Canyon is not volcanic at all.
So that'd be super cool to see those spires because they would probably look super different.
Yeah.
I wonder if they would look kind of like the pinnacles that you see at Crater Lake. Because those ones are volcanic.
Probably more like that. I've seen pictures. I'm trying to compare in my mind. But yeah, so they're not created the same as the ones in Bryce Canyon, but it does feel reminiscent of like hiking through hoodoos. So
sweet.
Pretty cool what people like to do here. The Echo Canyon Trail, the Heart of Rocks Loop, Big Balance Rock Trail. Those are really popular for hiking. There's the Bonita Canyon Scenic Drive that will take you to some viewpoints and trailheads. Rock climbing, again, anywhere you have rocks coming out of the ground, like people are like, let's climb that.
Yeah, you'll find people that are excited about that.
Yeah, so I would love to check that out. Stargazing, man, stargazing in Arizona. Does it get any better? I don't think it gets any better.
It doesn't, not really.
Stargazing and sunsets. So I bet they have really cool sunsets too. They have the Faraway Ranch Historic District. So you can learn more about that. And overall, I really am sad that I've never been there. So 100th year anniversary, baby, let's turn it into a national park.
I love it. Okay, for this last one, we're going back east.
Yeah, this one looks pretty cool.
This one's really interesting. The Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area. This one straddles the boundary between New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Which was really misleading to me because it says Delaware in the name. I was like, it's in New Jersey?
I know. It's like the most confusing name. There will be people that go to Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area and they'll be in Delaware and they'll be like,
what is this?
Sorry, you need to go to New Jersey.
So, yeah, this one looks pretty cool. National recreation areas are really interesting because you can do a lot in national recreation areas.
Mm-hmm.
So this one, I mean, the big thing here is the water. And it was established in 1965, so it's not super old. It is in Appalachian Mountains. So you get cliffs and scenic overlooks, and then you get the river. The Appalachian Trail goes through here.
Nice.
So another point for that one. The thing that I saw that I thought was really interesting about this one, people said, maybe this one is a contender, like they've been wanting to turn it into a national park. Some people have, but it's very similar to New River Gorge.
That's what I was wondering, because that's a big river rafting park.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering if this one cuts through the Appalachian Mountains, if it has some similarities in regards to recreation. And
even the pictures, it was like, that does look like New River Gorge in a lot of ways. From what I've seen, that's kind of a point against it. Since New River Gorge was the last one to be made, it was like, why would we protect something that looks about the same?
Interesting.
But people want it. And obviously, it's not the same. It's going to be different.
Plus, Joe Biden's home state is Delaware. So...
yeah, but this one's not in Delaware.
Right. But maybe he won't know that.
He's just really excited.
He'll campaign on re-election about getting national park for his home state.
Oh, my gosh.
That would be awesome.
So other things I think would be really cool about this, it's really close to like New York City and Philadelphia, which I just feel like, I don't know.
That's interesting.
It's kind of cool when a national park is close to like such a big population center, just because there's so many people that could access it and enjoy it.
Right.
Without having to take a big long trip or spend a lot of money. Like you've got people who can just go for the day.
Right.
And commune with nature and relax their souls.
And despite the fact that sometimes national parks feel really busy, we do actually need to add a lot of people to the crew. We need more national park people. And so we want anybody that we can get to join the club, to come camping and hiking and do outdoor stuff, just means that we get to protect more of these places and people take advantage of them and they appreciate them more. And I love like Cuyahoga Valley being so close to Cleveland.
Yeah, because then you have all those people who are like, we love the national parks.
Yeah, or Indiana Dunes being so close to Chicago.
Yeah.
It's actually really cool and really important to have some of these national parks easily accessible, especially back east, when a lot of times the feeling is like, all the national parks are back west.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would be great to have one right along the east coast.
Yeah, I agree. I think that'd be really cool. The other thing that sounds really cool about this one is that it does have a lot of prehistoric Native American settlements or evidence of. It played a huge role in the development of transportation and industry in the 19th century.
Mm.
So you've got some really cool cultural heritage there as well.
Nice.
In addition to the Appalachian Trail and the waterways.
Nice.
So what a lot of people like to do here, there's, again, lots of good hiking. Obviously, if you're in the middle of the Appalachian Mountains,
there's going to be good
there's going to be some good hiking. So people like to do the Mount Tammany Trail, the Appalachian Trail, McDade Recreational Trail. You've got some good scenic drives like Delaware Water Gap or the Old Mine Road were the ones that people really like. And then you just got like a ton of river recreation, kayaking, canoeing, tubing, which I love. Ooh, tubing.
Tubing would be awesome.
Yeah. So lots of good stuff to do in the Delaware River right there. That's why it's called the Delaware Water Gap.
Right.
It's the Delaware River.
Nice. That makes
connection
sense.
Connection made. So right. That's an option. You've got good wildlife watching here. A lot of people love to fish. Biking is a big thing here, which I think is super cool because you've got the McDade Recreational Trail, which runs parallel to the Delaware River.
That's what I was just going to say, because yeah. In Cuyahoga, if the river is slow enough to tube, that means that it's not moving very fast. And right. So you could probably just have a really chill bike ride.
Right.
It'd be sweet.
Yeah. So they have this trail right along the river. It says it's pretty flat with some really nice scenic views. So that's another option too. Overall, just, I think, really cool option for a new national park. Like I said, this one does not get my vote for the next one. I don't think they'll do it for the next one. I could be totally wrong, but I think I'm on board with what other people are saying, where it's a little bit too similar to New River Gorge, probably.
That makes sense.
Give it a year or two. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe so.
So should we make our votes?
Let's make our votes.
Okay.
I'm trying to decide which.
I chose mine.
Did you? Okay, you go first.
Okay. So mine would be the Katahdin Woods and Waters.
Yeah.
Just I don't know. I just think that one's so cool. The end of the Appalachian Trail. And I think I love Maine. I want to go back to Maine more often. And this would give me a chance to do that. So I would choose Katahdin Woods.
I think I'm leaning towards the Ocmulgee Mounds.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I think I'm leaning towards that one. I love stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I take such great pride in the history of the country.
Yeah.
And the Native Americans that lived here. And I think we need more things that show people that. Plus, I think the East needs another national park. I would love to see another national park in the East.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I
and
think
a lot
Ocmulgee
of these were
good.
Back East. That's pretty cool. So
yeah.
I love that those are all options.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I want to be like Chiricahua in Arizona, because that's close to us, and Craters of the Moon in Idaho, because that's close to us. Like, no, we already have enough. We have a bunch of parks out here. So let's give one to the East. Let's go to Georgia for Ocmulgee Mounds.
I like how we chose the beginning and the end of the Appalachian Trail, basically.
I know, it's true.
Georgia and Maine.
And so for your task this week, thanks for listening. We want to hear which one you would love to see as America's next national park.
Yes.
National park number 64. Which one do you vote for out of these seven options and why? So head to the Dirt in My Shoes Instagram or Facebook page. We'll have a post there for you where you can chime in on your favorite and let us know which one you would vote for to be America's next national park.
Yes. And then if you wouldn't mind, please head on over and give the Exploring the National Parks podcast a 5-star review. We just love hearing from you.
And special thanks again to Quinn for requesting this episode. We love your requests. Keep them coming. Head over to dirtinmyshoes.com/podcast to put in your request. There's a form at the bottom. And otherwise, we would just love to see you out on the trail. Be sure to go get some dirt in your shoes this week.